to make your days here count. Have fun, dig deep, stretch, dream big. Know, though, that things worth doing seldom come easy. There will be good days, and there will be bad days. There will be times when you want to turn around, pack it up, and call it quits. Those times tell you that you are pushing yourself, that you are not afraid to learn by trying. Taking the steps necessary to live your dream and do what you want to do will cost you. You will have to work hard. You will have to make sacrifices. You will have to keep learning and growing and changing. Are you willing to pay that price? I certainly hope you are. But know this, most people aren't. Number 9. When can you start doing what you would like to do? Ask people when they will do what they want to do, and most people answer, they hope to do it someday. Why not now? Because you're not ready? Perhaps you're not, but if you wait until you are, maybe you will never do it. Most of the accomplishments I've achieved in life, I began to attempt before I was really ready. When I was teaching pastors leadership in 1984 and they asked me for ongoing teaching, I wasn't ready to give it to them. But during a conference with 34 people in Jackson, Mississippi, I decided to pass around a legal pad and get the contact information for anyone who wanted to receive a monthly leadership tape. All 34 signed up. Was I ready to start a monthly leadership subscription series? No. Did I start it anyway? Yes. When I needed to raise money to relocate my church, did I know how to do it? No. Did I start to do it anyway? Yes. When I founded Equip to teach leadership to people in countries around the world, did I have a proven strategy to get it done? No. Did we get started anyway? Yes. Nobody ever got ready by waiting. You only get ready by starting. Number 10. What will it be like when you get to do what you'd like to do? Because I've had the privilege of doing what I've always wanted to do, I want to help you see ahead to what it's like. First, it will be different from what you imagined. I never thought that I would affect as many people as I do. I never knew life would be so beautiful. I never thought that I would want to occasionally withdraw from people to think and to write. But I also never anticipated the expectations others would put on me to produce. When you do what you want to do, it will be more difficult than you ever imagined. I had no idea how much time it would take to be effective. I never expected to have such great demands put on my life, or to have to keep paying the price to be successful. I also never dreamed that my energy level would go down as much as it has in recent years. Finally, let me tell you this. When you do what you've always wanted to do, it will be better than you ever imagined. When I started investing in my personal growth, I didn't anticipate a compounding return. For me personally, for the individuals I've mentored, and for my team. And I never dreamed it would be this much fun. Nothing else compares to doing what you were created to do. A few years ago at Exchange, a leadership event I host for executives each year, we were privileged to have Coretta Scott Keene and Bernice Keene as two of our speakers. We all sat in the sanctuary at Ebenezer Baptist Church in Atlanta and listened to them tell stories. What the Exchange attendees most wanted to know about was Martin Luther King Jr.'s I Have a Dream speech. Bernice told us that there were many speakers scheduled to address the crowd that day on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial. Many of them jockeyed for the best places in the speaking order, hoping to get TV time. Bernice's father gave up his time. He didn't care about his place on the docket. All he cared about was getting to communicate with the people. And when he did, it made history. Why? Because he was doing what he was made to do. The next year, the Civil Rights Act was passed in Washington, D.C. Keene had followed his passion, found his purpose, and as a result, made an impact on the world. People say that there are two great days in a person's life, the day you are born and the day you discover why. I want to encourage you to seek what you are put here on earth to do, then pursue it with all of your effort. Applying the law of awareness to your life. The questions in this chapter were designed to prompt you to know yourself and to get on course to do what you were made to do in life. Here is a streamlined version of the questions. Spend a significant amount of time answering them so you have a plan of action to follow when you're done. Number one, what would you like to do? Number two, what talents, skills, and opportunities do you possess that support your desire to do it? Number three, what are your motives for wanting to do it? Number four, what steps must you take beginning today to start doing what you want to do? Awareness, action, accountability. Number five, whose advice can you give to help you along the way? Number six, what price are you willing to pay? What will it cost you in time, resources, and sacrifices? Number seven, where do you most need to grow? You must focus on your strengths and overcome any weaknesses that would keep you from reaching your goal. Chapter 3, The Law of the Mirror. You must see value in yourself to add value to yourself. Dennis Waitley said, "Personal development is the belief that you are worth the effort, time, and energy needed to develop yourself." I often ask myself what keeps people from being successful. I believe all people have the seeds of success within them. All they need to do is to cultivate those seeds, water them, feed them, and they will begin to grow. That is why I have spent my life trying to add value to people. I love to see people blossom. So why do many people fail to grow and reach their potential? I've concluded that one of the main reasons is low self-esteem. Many people don't believe in themselves. They don't see the possibilities that God put in them. They possess 100 acres of possibilities, yet never cultivate them because they are convinced that they won't be able to learn and grow and blossom into something wonderful. Potential squashed. That was the case of Johnetta McSwain, whose story I recently learned about. For more than 30 years, she was someone who saw little value or potential in herself. But to be honest, there were many legitimate reasons for her poor perception of herself. She was born to a single mother who didn't want her and told her so. She and her sister Sonia, who was a year older along with a cousin, spent the first 5 or 6 years of their lives being raised by their grandmother in Birmingham, Alabama. But the house was also shared by 3 uncles who abused all 3 of the children psychologically, physically, and sexually. Johnetta was scarred both physically and emotionally. "By the time I was 5 years old, says Johnetta, I had already started to believe that I was not only inferior, but I was also a child abandoned by her own mama. As a child, I had no place, no voice, and no worth at all." When Johnetta and Sonia's mother learned about the abuse, she moved the 3 girls to a new home. But the abuse continued, this time from the men her mother brought home. Sonia ultimately responded by living on the streets and turning to crack cocaine. Johnetta avoided drugs, but she spent much of her time on the streets and dropped out of high school in the 11th grade. She had her first child out of wedlock at age 19, then a second child in her mid-20s. For the most part, she lived in government-supported housing and on government assistance and relied on her boyfriends for additional support. To keep herself in designer clothes, she resorted to shoplifting. Sonia's perspective poignantly sums up the state that they were in. "Everybody in my family been in jail, on drugs, didn't finish high school, so what I got to live for? What I got to amount to? Nothing. What I got to accomplish? Nothing." A look in the mirror. Janetta's 30th birthday calls her to look in the mirror. She didn't like what she saw. She writes, "That day I woke up and realized I had absolutely nothing to celebrate. No money, no full-time job, no home, no husband, and no clue, not even the will to do better. At last, I knew it was time to make some changes." She wasn't happy with her life, and she realized that if she continued in the same direction she was going, her 2 sons would also be headed for trouble. As far as she knew, not a single male member of her family had ever finished high school. Many died young or ended up in jail. She didn't want that for her boys. For Janetta, the process started with her working to get her GED. She took a 12-week course to prepare and then took the test. She needed a score of 45 to pass, She received a 44.5. But she was determined to make something of herself, so she scheduled a retake at her first opportunity. When she passed, she was excited to be chosen to speak at the graduation ceremony. No one from her family bothered to attend. Janetta knew that if she was going to change, she needed to leave Birmingham and get a fresh start. And she wanted to do something no one in her family had ever done, go to college. She decided to move to Atlanta, Georgia, and was motivated by a profound thought. I get a chance to be anyone I want to be. It took her almost 3 years to pull it off, but she made the move. Soon afterward, she enrolled in Kennesaw State University, deciding to take more than a full load every semester. She was 33 years old when she started school. She was street smart, but not very book smart, at least not at first. That intimidated her in the beginning, but for the first time in her life, she was determined to better herself, and soon she realized she could do it. I realized I didn't have to be smart, Janetta explains. I just had to be determined, motivated, and focused. This came with a high price tag for me. I had to exchange my thinking. I had to think like a smart person. Not only did she study hard and stay focused, but she also sought out the smartest person in each of her classes and asked to study with her. Soon she was studying and thinking like the best students in the school. She also maintained the vision she had for her future. At the beginning of every semester, she went to the bookstore on campus and tried on a cap and gown, looking at herself in the mirror and imagining what it would be like to graduate. One day when a classmate was talking to her, she had a realization. The classmate was saying, I don't love myself. I'm a nobody. Janetta responded, you sure can love you if I love me. And that's when it hit her, maybe for the first time. I realized I love myself. She had changed. She was turning into the person she wanted to be, that she was created to be. Janetta completed the work for a bachelor's degree in 3 years. Then she enrolled in graduate school, where she earned a master's degree in social work. Currently, she is working toward earning her doctorate. I went for something that society told me you can't do, says Janetta. Oh, yes, I can. The power of positive self-esteem. Janetta's story is a powerful example of what can happen in a person's life when she recognizes her value and begins to add value to herself. In Janetta's case, she was motivated by the desire to help her children, and she began to add value to herself first and later saw the value in herself. It doesn't matter which occurs first. One feeds the other. What matters is that the cycle of value starts. If you don't realize that you have genuine value and that you are worth investing in, then you will never put in the time and effort needed to grow to your potential. If you're not sure you agree with that, then consider the following. Self-esteem is the single most significant key to a person's behavior. Often I have heard my friend Zig Ziglar say, it's impossible to consistently behave in a manner inconsistent with how we see ourselves. We can do very few things in a positive way if we feel negative about ourselves. Zig has a very practical, common-sense wisdom that he's shared with people for years, but experts in the field agree with his assessment. Nathaniel Brandon, a psychiatrist and expert on the subject of self-esteem, says, no factor is more important in people's psychological development and motivation than the value judgments they make about themselves. Every aspect of their lives is impacted by the way they see themselves. If you believe you are worthless, then you won't add value to yourself. Low self-esteem puts a ceiling on our potential. I'm well known for teaching the law of the lid from the 21 irrefutable laws of leadership. Imagine that you want to do something great in your life that impacts a lot of people. Perhaps you want to build a large organization. That desire, no matter how great, will be limited by your leadership. It is a lid on your potential. Well, your self-esteem has the same kind of impact. If your desire is a 10, but your self-esteem is a 5, you'll never perform at the level of a 10. You'll perform as a 5 or lower. People are never able to outperform their self-image. As Nathaniel Brandon says, If you feel inadequate to face challenges unworthy of love and respect, unentitled to happiness and fear assertive thoughts, wants, or needs, if you lack basic self-trust, self-respect, and self-confidence, your self-esteem deficiency will limit you no matter what other assets you possess. The value we place on ourselves is usually the value others place on us. A man went to a fortune teller to hear what she had to say about his future. She looked into a crystal ball and said, "You will be poor and unhappy until you are 45 years old." "Then what will happen?" asked the man, hopefully. "Then you will get used to it." I'm sorry to say that's the way most people live their lives, according to what others believe about them. If the important people in their lives expect them to go nowhere, then that's what they expect of themselves. That's fine if you're surrounded by people who believe in you, but what if you're not? You shouldn't become too concerned about what others might think of you. You should be more concerned about what you think of yourself. That's what Janetta McSwain did. As she prepared for her move to Atlanta, her friends and her family told her it would never happen. When she did move, they told her she would fail and return to Birmingham. Nobody really believed in her. She didn't care. She had her own solution. She says you don't have to accept what people say you have to be. Isn't that wonderful? If you put a small value on yourself, rest assured, the world will not raise the price. If you want to become the person you have the potential to be, you must believe you can. Steps to build your self-image. I must admit that self-image has never been a problem for me. I grew up in a very positive environment and have always believed I could succeed. But I've worked with a lot of people who didn't, and I've been able to help some of them turn the corner and believe in themselves the way I believe in them. And I hope to be able to help you too, if that's your situation. To get you started, please take to heart the following 10 suggestions. Number 1, guard your self-talk. Whether you know it or not, you have a running conversation with yourself all the time. What is the nature of yours? Do you encourage yourself or do you criticize yourself? If you are positive, then you help to create a positive self-image. If you're negative, you undermine your self-worth. Where does negative, critical self-talk come from? Usually from our upbringing. In their book, The Answer, businessmen authors John Assaroff and Murray Smith talk about the negative messages children receive growing up. They write, "By the time you're 17 years old, you've heard, 'No, you can't,' an average of 150,000 times. You've heard, 'Yes, you can,' about 5,000 times. That's 30 no's for every yes. That makes for a powerful belief of, 'I can't.' That's a lot to overcome." It's one of the reasons it took Janetta McSwain 30 years to start believing she could change. From an early age, she had been made to feel valueless. If we want to change our lives, we have to change the way we think of ourselves. If we want to change the way we think of ourselves, we need to change the way we talk to ourselves. And the older we are, the more responsible we are for how we think, talk, and believe. Don't you have enough problems in life already? Why add to them by discouraging yourself every day with negative self-talk? When I was a child, my favorite story was The Little Engine That Could. Why? Because I found it so encouraging. I used to read it over and over, and I used to think, "That's me. I think I can too." You need to learn to become your own encourager, your own cheerleader. Every time you do a good job, don't just let it pass. Give yourself a compliment. Every time you choose discipline over indulgence, don't tell yourself that you should have anyway. Recognize how much you are helping yourself. Every time you make a mistake, don't bring up everything that's wrong with yourself. Tell yourself that you're paying the price for growth and that you will learn to do better next time. Every positive thing you can say to yourself will help. Number 2, stop comparing yourself to others. When I started my career, I looked forward to the annual report from the organization showing the statistics for each of its leaders. As soon as I received them in the mail, I'd look for my standing and compare my progress with the progress of all the other leaders. After about 5 years of doing that, I realized how harmful it was. What happens when you compare yourself to others? Usually it's one of two things. Either you perceive the other person to be far ahead of you and you feel discouraged, or you perceive yourself to be better than the other person, and you become proud. Neither of those is good for you, and neither will help you grow. Comparing yourself to others is really just a needless distraction. The only one you should compare yourself to is you. Your mission is to become better today than you were yesterday. You do that by focusing on what you can do today to improve and grow. Do that enough, and if you look back and compare the you of weeks, months, or years ago to the you of today, you should be greatly encouraged by your progress. Number 3, move beyond your limiting beliefs. I love the old comic strip, Shoe, by Jeff McNally. In one of my favorites, Shoe is pitching a baseball game. In a conference on the mound, his catcher says, "You've got to have faith in your curveball." "It's easy for him to say," grumbles Shoe. "When it comes to believing in myself, I'm an agnostic." Unfortunately, that's the way a lot of people think about themselves. They don't believe they can accomplish great things. But the greatest limitations people experience on their lives are usually the ones they impose on themselves. As industrialist Charles Schwab said, "When a man has put a limit on what he will do, he has put a limit on what he can do." That was true for Jeanette McSwain. As soon as she changed her self-limiting thinking, she was able to change her life. Author Jack Canfield offers a solution to self-limiting thinking. In his book, The Success Principles, he recommends the following 4 steps to transform limiting beliefs into empowering beliefs. Identify a limiting belief that you want to change. Determine how that belief limits you. Decide how you want to be, act, or feel. And create a turnaround statement that affirms or gives you permission to be, act, or feel this new way. That's really good advice. Once you do it, repeat that turnaround statement to yourself every day for as long as you must in order to change your self-limiting thinking. For example, let's say that you would like to learn a foreign language to improve your career or better enjoy a vacation, but you don't think that you can do it. Once you've identified that belief, define how not learning that language is limiting you. Then describe what it will be like when you learn that language. How will it make you feel? What will it enable you to do? What might it do for your career? Then write an empowering statement that affirms your ability to learn the language, outlines the realistic process you will use to learn it, and describes how you will be impacted by this growth. Remember, in the end, it isn't what you are that holds you back. It's what you think you're not. Number 4, add value to others. Because people with low self-esteem often see themselves as inadequate or feel like victims, which often starts because they actually have been victimized in their past, they focus inordinately on themselves. They can become self-protective and selfish because they feel that they have to be to survive. If that is true of you, then you can combat these feelings by serving others and working to add value to them, making a difference. Even a small one in the lives of other people lifts one's self-esteem. It's hard to feel bad about yourself when you're doing something good for someone else. In addition to that, adding value to others makes them value you more. It creates a cycle of positive feeling from one person to another. Number 5, do the right thing, even if it's the hard thing. One of the best ways to build self-esteem is to do what's right. It gives a strong sense of satisfaction. And what happens whenever you don't do the right thing? Either you feel guilt, which makes you feel bad about yourself, or you lie to yourself to try to convince yourself that your actions weren't wrong or weren't that important. That does harm to you as a person and to your self-esteem. Being true to yourself and your values is a tremendous self-esteem builder. Every time you take action that builds your character, you become stronger as a person. The harder the task, the greater the character builder. You can actually act yourself into feeling good about yourself because positive character expands into every area of your life, giving you confidence and positive feelings about everything you do. Number six, practice a small discipline daily in a specific area of your life. When I began my career as a minister, one of the things I did was work a little bit every day on my Sunday sermon. As I talked to my peers, I found out that this was not the way most people in my position did things. Most of my colleagues started their preparation on Friday. I couldn't understand why they would do it that way. It was like facing a mountain, overwhelming. However, I found that if I chipped away all week by the time Friday came, I was confident that I could complete the task. If there is an area in your life that seems overwhelming to you, health, work, family, or something else, try chipping away at it a little bit every day instead of trying to tackle it all at once. Since your self-worth is based upon positive habits, actions, and decisions you practice every day, why not build your self-esteem and tackle your biggest problems at the same time? Don't fret or worry about it. Do something specific about it. Discipline is a morale builder. Boost yours by taking small steps that will take you in a positive direction. Number seven, celebrate small victories. This next suggestion is really a follow-up to the previous ones. When you do the right thing, or you take a small step in the right direction, what is your emotional response? What kinds of things do you tell yourself? Are your thoughts like these? Well, it's about time. I didn't do as much as I should have. That won't make a difference. It's hopeless. I'll never succeed. Or are they more like these? It's good that I did that. I did the right thing. Good for me. Every little bit helps. I'm that much closer to success. If your thinking runs more like the first list, then you need to change your thinking. I have to admit, I have no trouble celebrating small victories. Then again, I have no trouble celebrating big ones either. I just love celebrating. You should too. Taking a break to celebrate is good for you. If nothing is ever good enough, you can lose heart. Celebrating encourages you. It helps to inspire you to keep going. Don't underestimate its power. Number eight, embrace a positive vision for your life based on what you value. When Reese Witherspoon won the 2006 Oscar for Best Actress for her portrayal of June Carter Cash in Walk the Line, she quoted June Carter Cash saying, "People used to ask June how she was doing, and she would say, 'I'm just trying to matter.' I know what she means. We all want our lives to matter. That's hard to do when we don't believe we matter." If you have a positive vision for your life and you take action to fulfill that vision, then you will more readily recognize that your life matters. For example, Janetta loved and valued her children, and she had a positive vision for them, one where they prospered and broke the cycle of violence perpetuated by the men in her family. Because of that, she took action to fulfill that vision. What do you value? What prompts you to see a positive vision for your life? If you don't have a vision, you are likely to be apathetic. However, if you tap into what you value and try to see what could be, it can inspire you to take positive action. And every positive action you take helps you to believe in yourself, which in turn helps you to take more positive action. Number nine, practice the one-word strategy. A couple of years ago, I read a book by Kevin Hall called Aspire, which really inspired me. So much so that I wanted to meet the author, whom I found to be a delightful person. One of my favorite passages in the book communicates something Kevin does to help people grow. The first thing I do when I'm coaching someone who aspires to stretch, grow, and go higher in life is to have that person select the one word that best describes him or her. Once that person does that, it's as if he or she has turned the page in a book and highlighted one word. Instead of seeing 300 different words on the page, the person's attention and intention is focused immediately on that single word, that single gift. What the individual focuses on expands. Why do I like this practice of picking one word? Because it tells you a lot about how you think about yourself. Try it. If you could pick only one word to describe yourself, what would it be? I hope it's positive. If it is, it will help you to go in the right direction. If it's not, then you need to change your word. Number 10, take responsibility for your life. We tend to get in life what we are willing to tolerate. If we allow others to disrespect us, we get disrespected. If we tolerate abuse, we get abused. If we think it's okay to be overworked and underpaid, guess what will happen? If we don't have a plan and purpose for our lives, we will become part of someone else's. It's no mistake that Janetta's life turned around when she took responsibility for herself and where she was and decided to get control of her life and make positive changes. Those changes weren't easy, nor did they occur quickly. She had to dig herself out of a big hole, but she did it, and so can you. I wish I could sit down with you, hear your story, and encourage you specifically in your journey. If you've had a difficult time and you don't feel good about yourself, I want to tell you that you do have value. You matter. Your life can change, and you can make a difference. No matter what kind of background you have or where you come from, no matter what traumas you've suffered or mistakes you've made, you can learn and grow. You can become the person you have the potential to be. You just need to believe in yourself to get started. And every time you take a step, think a positive thought, make a good choice, practice a small discipline, you're moving one step closer. Just keep moving forward and keep believing. Applying the law of the mirror to your life. Number 1, make a list of all of your best personal qualities. If you have positive self-esteem, then this will probably be easy for you. If you don't, it may be a struggle. Don't give up. If needed, spend days or weeks creating the list. Don't stop until you have written 100 positive things about yourself. If it took you a long time to create this list, then you need to spend time every day reading through it to remind yourself of your value. Remember, if you do not value yourself, you will have a very difficult time adding value to yourself. Using the list as a springboard, decide on the one word that best describes you. Make this word your North Star as you begin adding value to yourself. Number 2, few things impact a person's self-esteem more than the way they talk to themselves on a day-to-day basis. Are you aware of how you talk to yourself? Keep track by using your smartphone, carrying an index card so you can tally the number of times each day this week that you think something positive or negative about yourself. In addition, you can ask close friends or family members to tell you whether they think you see yourself in a favorable or unfavorable light. Number 3, if you want to feel valuable, add value to others. How much time every day and every week do you spend focusing on others and adding value to them? Do you serve others through a volunteer organization? Do you mentor other people? Do you give assistance to others less fortunate than yourself? If you aren't doing so already, find a way to serve and add value to others on a weekly basis. Do something that utilizes your strengths, benefits others, and makes you feel good about yourself. Start small. If you're already serving, then do more. It's a good rule of thumb to give a tenth of your time to serving and adding value to others. So, for example, if you work 40 hours a week, devote 4 hours to serving others. Chapter 4, The Law of Reflection. Learning to pause allows growth to catch up with you. Peter Drucker said, follow effective action with quiet reflection. From the quiet reflection will come even more effective action. There are many different ways of growing and an infinite number of lessons to be learned in life. But there are some kinds of growth that come to us only if we are willing to stop, pause, and allow the lesson to catch up with us. I experienced one of those in March of 2011. A change in paradigm. I was traveling on an extended speaking trip and I landed in Kiev, Ukraine, on one of my stops. And while I was there, I was scheduled to speak 3 times to a group of about 5,000 business people. I had been to Kiev several times before and enjoyed both the place and the people. About an hour before the first scheduled event, I met my Ukrainian translator. We chatted a while so we could get to know each other. A few minutes into our conversation, he said, I read several of your books. You say that you want to add value to people, but that's not easy here. People don't trust leaders, and with good reason. Leaders don't add value to others here. Then he added, I sure hope you can help them. His words left quite an impression on me, and what he told me prompted me to recall conversations with my good friend Jim Dornan, the leader of Network 21, an organization that works in many of those countries that were once behind the Iron Curtain. Jim had told me that in any country where government was crooked and the leaders were crooked and selfish, being able to circumvent authority and working the system were seen as virtues. Because I still had a little time before I had to speak, I went to the green room so I could pause and reflect on what I had just learned. I was feeling emotional, and I wanted to take time to let my thinking catch up to my feelings. So I started to ask myself some questions. How was I feeling? The answer was sad. Living under communist rule for generations had beaten people down, discouraged them, and made them cynical. It's hard to get ahead when you have very little hope. What could I do? I could show them my heart. For some of these people, perhaps no leader had ever told them he cared about them and wanted them to succeed. How could I do that? I could let them know that I knew what their situation was and felt for them. I could tell them that I would be just like them if I had grown up in that environment, but that there is a higher road for a leader, one where leaders add value to others. I could help them understand that even if they have never been valued by their leaders, they could become leaders who added value to others. They could become change agents for the future success of their country and themselves. I then took a moment and prayed, asking God to help me deliver that message with clarity and integrity. I didn't completely abandon what I planned to speak about that day, but I sure modified it for and tailored it to my audience. And one of the first things I said, which I repeated often that first day, was, "My name is John, and I'm your friend." I said it sincerely. And I also used it to help soften some hard but humorous truths that I was delivering. At first, they weren't sure how to react to that statement. After a while, they started to anticipate it. By the end of the day, when I said it, they knew a zinger was coming, and they'd laugh in anticipation. And the next day, when I came in and prepared to speak, my translator said that everyone was saying the phrase to one another. That's when I realized that they understood that I was cheering them on and really wanted to help them. It's never enough for me to just show up and give a good speech when I've been invited to an event. Every time I speak, I want to do two things, add value to the people I talk to and exceed the expectations of the person who invited me. It's likely I would have failed on both counts on this trip if I hadn't taken the time to pause, let the honest insights from my interpreter soak in, and change my agenda to match what my audience needed. The power of pausing. If you're nearly as old as I am, you may remember an old slogan once used by Coca-Cola. They called Coke the pause that refreshes. That's what reflection is to someone who desires to grow. Learning to pause allows growth to catch up with you. That's the law of reflection. Here are my observations concerning the power of the pause and how reflection can help you to grow. Number one, reflection turns experience into insight. For over 2,000 years, people have been saying that experience is the best teacher. According to one expert, the earliest recorded version of this saying came from Roman Emperor Julius Caesar, who wrote, "Experience is the teacher of all things." With all due respect, I disagree with that statement. Experience is not the best teacher. Evaluated experience is. The only reason Caesar was able to make that claim was because he had learned much by reflecting on his life and writing about it. There's an old joke that experience is a hard teacher because the test is given first and the lesson is given afterward. That's true, but only if the person takes time to reflect after the experience. Otherwise, you receive the test first and the lesson may never come. People have innumerable experiences every day, and many learn nothing from them because they never take the time to pause and reflect. That's why it's so important to pause and let understanding catch up with us. I once heard that at the turn of the century, there was a buggy whip factory that had made major improvements in their manufacturing process. They made the best quality whips, and they were continuing to improve them. No other manufacturer in the industry compared. There was just one problem. They were working at a time when the automobile was being introduced, and it wasn't long before the entire nation would change to a horseless carriage. The company soon went out of business. I can't help wondering what the outcome might have been if the leaders of the company had taken time to pause, understand what their experience was trying to teach them, and make changes in the course that they were on. Number two, everyone needs a time and a place to pause. I've yet to meet a person who doesn't benefit from pausing and reflecting. In fact, stopping to reflect is one of the most valuable activities people can do to grow. It has much greater value to them than even motivation or encouragement. Why? Because pausing allows them to make sure that they are on the right track. After all, if someone is going down the wrong road, he doesn't need motivation to speed up. He needs to stop, reflect, and change course. In my book, Thinking for a Change, I encourage people to identify or create a thinking place. Did I do that because there is some magic in having a designated place to pause and think? No. I did it because if you go to the trouble to create a place to pause and think, and you schedule the time to go there, you will probably actually use it, and you will benefit from it. Most people are pretty busy. There are a lot of demands on them, and they rush from place to place trying to get things done. Along the way, they have certain experiences that are life markers. They go to a place or are part of an event or meet a person that in some way marks them for life because something important happened. Often these markers identify for them a time of transition, change, or transformation. If we don't take the time to pause and reflect, we can miss the significance of such events. Reflection allows those experiences to move from being life markers to life makers. If we pause to allow growth to catch up with us, it makes our lives better, because we not only better understand the significance of what we've experienced, but we can implement changes and course corrections as a result. We are also better equipped to teach others from the wisdom we have gained. Number three, pausing with intention expands and enriches thinking. Study the lives of the great people who have made an impact on the world, and you will find that in virtually every case, they spent a considerable amount of time alone thinking. Every significant religious leader in history spent time in solitude. Every political leader who had an impact on history practiced the discipline of solitude to think and to plan. Great artists spend countless hours in their studios or with their instruments not just doing, but exploring their ideas and experiences. Most leading universities give their faculty time not only to teach, but to think, research, and write. Time alone allows people to sort through their experience, put it into perspective, and plan for the future. If you are a leader, you can probably take the normal busyness of life and multiply it by 10. Leaders are so action-oriented and have so many responsibilities that they are often guilty of moving all the time and neglecting to stop and take time to think. Yet this is one of the most important things leaders can do. A minute of thought is worth more than an hour of talk. I strongly encourage you to find a place to think and to discipline yourself to pause and use it, because it has the potential to change your life. It can help you to figure out what's really important and what isn't. As writer and Catholic priest Henry J.M. Nouwen observed, when you are able to create a lonely place in the middle of your actions and concerns, your successes and failures slowly can lose some of their power over you. Number four, when you take time to pause, use the letter I. When you take time to pause and reflect, there are really four basic directions your thinking should go. The first letter I stands for investigation. There's a corny old joke about two guys who have been given the job of cleaning out a stable. They're up to their ankles in horse manure, and one says to the other, "There must be a horse around here somewhere. Some things are obvious and don't require reflection to figure them out. Others require a person to play detective. The great scientist Galileo said, "All truths are easy to understand once they are discovered. The point is to discover them. That takes investigation." Pausing means more than just slowing down to smell the roses. It means stopping and really figuring them out. That generally requires a person to ask questions, which I'll discuss in the next section of this chapter. The thing to remember is that continual growth from experiences is only possible when we discover insights and truths within them. That comes from investigation. The second letter I stands for incubation. Incubation is taking an experience of life and putting it into the slow cooker of your mind to simmer for a while. It's very similar to meditation. It's like the flip side of prayer. When I pray, I talk to God. When I meditate, I listen to Him. Incubation is listening and learning. I'm continually putting quotes and ideas in my mental crockpot to let them incubate. These days I do that by putting them in the Notes app of my iPhone. I keep them there for days, weeks, or months, and look at them often to reflect on them. Here are some of the quotes I'm currently thinking about. If you're not at the table, you're on the menu. You don't wait or rush yourself out of a crisis, you work yourself out. The mark of an effective leader is one who absorbs the punishment without surrendering his soul. I give ideas as long as they need until I discover an insight or experience the next I, which is illumination. Jim Rohn remarked, "At the end of each day, you should play back the tapes of your performance. The results should either applaud you or prod you." What he's talking about is illumination. These are the aha moments in your life, the epiphanies when you experience sudden realization or insight. It's when the proverbial light bulb turns on. Few things in life are more rewarding than such moments. I find that I experience moments of illumination only after I spend time investigating an idea and then allowing it to incubate for a period of time. But such moments are the reward for committing time and effort to pausing and reflecting. The last letter I is illustration. Most good ideas are like skeletons. They provide good structure, but they need meat on their bones. They lack substance. And until they have it, they aren't that useful. What would a speech be without good illustrations? A flat outline. What would a book be without fleshed-out ideas, good stories, and insightful quotes? Boring. Illustrating is the process of putting flesh on ideas. Author and firefighter Peter M. Leshak believes, "All of us are watchers of television, of time clock, of traffic, on the freeway, but few are observers. Everyone is looking, not many are seeing." That isn't true for people who find a place to reflect and are intentional about pausing to allow learning to catch up with them. Good questions are the heart of reflection. Whenever I take time to pause and reflect, I begin by asking myself a question. Whenever I'm thinking and reflecting, and I feel like I have hit a roadblock, I ask myself questions. If I'm trying to learn something new and delve deeper into an area so I can grow, I ask questions. I spend a lot of my life asking questions. But that's a good thing. As author and speaker Anthony Robbins says, successful people ask better questions, and as a result, they get better answers. I cannot overemphasize the importance of asking good questions when it comes to personal growth. If your questions are focused, they will stimulate creative thinking. Why? Because there's something about a well-worded question that often penetrates to the heart of the matter and triggers new ideas and insights. If your questions are honest, they will lead to solid convictions. If you ask quality questions, they will help you to create a high-quality life. Sir Francis Bacon, English philosopher, statesman, scientist, lawyer, jurist, author, and pioneer of the scientific method, asserted, "If a person will begin with certainties, he will end in doubts. But if he will be content to begin with doubts, he will end in certainties." Personal awareness questions. Teaching other people how to ask questions effectively can be a difficult challenge because the questions they ask, usually, must be tailored to the situation. So perhaps the best way to give you insight on this issue is to share with you a series of 10 questions that I've asked and answered to help me develop personal awareness. Number one, what is my biggest asset? I believe my greatest asset has always been my attitude. I first learned the value of a positive attitude from my father, Melvin Maxwell, who overcame his naturally pessimistic outlook by reading books by people like Norman Vincent Peale. My wife, Margaret, also has an uncommonly good attitude. Over the years, we've occasionally wondered why others seem to have so many more problems than we do. We finally come to the conclusion that we don't have fewer problems, we just don't allow the problems we have to get us down or distract us from what we believe is important. What has answering this question done for me? It has not only encouraged me to continue to cultivate a positive attitude, but has also reminded me that one of the best things I can do for others is speak positively into their lives. Let them know I believe in them and encourage them in their journey. Number two, what is my biggest liability? Without a doubt, having unrealistic expectations is a major shortcoming in my life. Because I am naturally optimistic, I underestimate how much time, money, and effort most endeavors will require, and that can get me into trouble. What has answering this question done to help me grow? It has tempered my expectations toward others. Modifying my expectations to be more realistic has helped me to set up my team to succeed rather than fail. And it has also helped me to create more realistic goals for team members and the organizations they serve. Number three, what is my highest high? Without a doubt, my family is the source of my highest highs in my life. Margaret is my best friend. I can't imagine life without her. And we are enjoying our favorite season of life now as grandparents. Number four, what is my lowest low? Ironically, my lowest lows have also come as a result of the family. Why? Because I love my family members so much, yet I have to let them make their own choices. That can be tough for someone with my personality. Years ago, when my children were still teenagers, I was having a conversation with Ron Blue and Howie Hendricks, and I asked them, when is this parenting thing over? They told me it never ends, and they were right. How has it helped me grow? Knowing that the best and the worst of life is related to family? It has helped me to enjoy the times I have with my family and to stay out of my grown children's decision-making unless they ask for my advice. Number five, what is my most worthwhile emotion? I don't think there is a more worthwhile emotion than love. We live at our best when we love what we do, love our friends and family, even love our enemies. As a person of faith, I know this is the standard that God has set for me. It also is the desire of my heart. How does knowing this help me grow? Love is a choice, and it often requires effort. So to love others as I would like to do, I must be intentional about it and choose to love people every day. Number six, what is my least worthwhile emotion? The least attractive emotion, not only for me, but for any person, is self-pity. It is destructive and self-serving. In Earth and Altar, Eugene H. Peterson says, pity is one of the noblest emotions available to human beings. Self-pity is possibly the most ignoble. Pity is the capacity to enter into the pain of another in order to do something about it. Self-pity is an incapacity, a crippling emotional disease that severely distorts our perception of reality. Pity discovers the need in others for love and healing and then fashions speech and action that brings strength. Self-pity reduces the universe to a personal wound that is displayed as proof of significance. Pity is adrenaline for acts of mercy. Self-pity is a narcotic that leaves its addicts wasted and derelict. Knowing the negative effects of self-pity reminds me to avoid it categorically. It cannot help me. It will always harm me. Number seven, what is my best habit? H.P. Lyndon, Chancellor of St. Paul's in London in the 1800s, observed, what we do on some great occasion will depend on what we are, and what we are will be the result of previous years of self-discipline. I believe that 100%. That is one of the reasons I work hard to follow through on daily disciplines. I believe a person's secret of success is found in his daily agenda. Perhaps the greatest value of questioning myself in this area is that it exposes my weaknesses regarding the discipline for my health. Developing good eating habits has been a lifelong struggle, and I did not exercise regularly until after I suffered my heart attack. I continue to work hard to try to grow in this area. Number 8, what is my worst habit? Without a doubt, my worst personal trait is impatience. It was part of my early nature as a child and has become ingrained in me as a habit. When I was a child, we used to visit my Grandpa Maxwell, and it never failed that at some point while we were there, he would sit my brother Larry and me down in two chairs and offer to pay us a nickel if we would sit quietly in those chairs for 5 minutes. Larry always earned his nickel, and I never did. Not one time. I have learned that there are things in life that you have to work for, and there are things in life that you have to wait for. I am still trying to grow when it comes to waiting. I suspect that this will be a goal of mine until the day I die. Number 9, what is most fulfilling to me? The thing I enjoy doing most is communicating to other people. When I communicate, I know that I'm in my strength zone. I feel the most fulfilled, and I make the greatest impact. Every time I do it, I have a sense deep down that says, I was made for this. Early in my career, knowing that communication was fulfilling to me prompted me to become a better speaker because back then, I wasn't very good at it. For more than 10 years, it was one of the top areas I dedicated myself to when it came to growth. I continued to try to grow as a communicator, but the value I receive from asking this question today is that it helps me to stay focused, so I'm doing what returns the most value to others and to myself. Number 10, what do I prize most highly? I value nothing as highly as I do my faith. It forms my values. It guides my actions. It has been the foundation of my teaching on leadership. It is my source and my security. Mother Teresa said, faith keeps the person who keeps the faith. I found that to be true. Author Philip Yancey described faith as trusting in advance what will only make sense in reverse. Having faith and knowing its value in my life helps me to have a divine perspective every day. I need that because I can easily get off course otherwise. The previous 10 questions were ones I actually asked myself to prompt me to reflect and help me grow in the area of self-awareness. You can ask yourself questions in just about any area of your life to help you pause, focus, and learn. For example, if you wanted to grow in the area of relationships, you could ask yourself the following questions. 1. Do I value people? 2. Do people know I value them? 3. How do I show it? 4. Am I a plus or a minus in my most important relationships? 5. What evidence do I have to confirm my opinion? 6. What is the love language of the people that I love? 7. How can I serve them? 8. Do I need to forgive someone in my life who needs to be given grace? 9. Who in my life should I take time to thank? And 10. Who in my life should be receiving more of my time? Or if you wanted to pause and think about where you are in the area of personal growth, you could ask the following questions. 1. Do I know and practice the 15 laws of personal growth? 2. Which 3 laws do I do best? 3. Which 3 are my weakest? 4. Am I growing daily? 5. What am I doing to grow daily? 6. How am I growing? 7. What are the roadblocks that are keeping me from growing? 8. What are the breakthroughs I need to keep growing? 9. What were the potential learning moments I experienced today and did I seize them? And 10. Am I passing on to someone what I'm learning? What you want to accomplish in life and where you are in the journey will determine what areas you most need to think about today, tailoring the questions to yourself. But the most important thing you must do is write out the questions and write out the answers. Why? Because you will discover that what you think after you write the answer is different from what you thought before you wrote it. Writing helps you to discover what you truly know, think, and believe. Worth the trouble. All of this probably sounds like a lot of steps and a lot of trouble. You're right. It is. That's why most people never do it. But it is worth every bit of effort you put into it. The farther you go in life, the more critical it is that you take time to pause and think. The older you are, the less time you have to stay on purpose and do things you were created to do. But here's the good news. If you've been